Today, we have a special guest, Andy Couturier. Andy has written a book called Writing Open the Mind, and the subtext is Tapping the Subconscious to Free the Writing and the Writer. Tapping the Subconscious.
Yes.
So how do you tap the subconscious, and how come you came to think about the unconscious?
Well, the answer is not one answer, but many answers, and they're going to be different for different people in different times. But to answer your second question, I was actually first introduced to the subconscious mind by being told about hypnotism as a boy. I was an 11-year-old boy, and the appliance repairman came by and started telling me about hypnosis. I was living in suburban Illinois at the time.
Oh, my goodness.
And he said, well, if you want to be hypnotized, I can hypnotize you. And to my parents' credit, they said, great. And
it was really
interesting. And he invited me to a hypnosis symposium that I went out to. And we did all kinds of things like age regression and group dreaming. And I had no idea, and most probably 11-year-olds don't, that, you know, we all have this part of our brain that's often unused and untapped. So that was, I guess, the first place I got interested in the subconscious mind. But
really? Okay.
Also, Buddhist meditation over the years has been very important to me, as well as improvisational theater and writing itself. Often we think of writing, they say that the right brain is artistic and image-oriented, and the left brain is more linear and logical, and that means words, which is an interesting way of talking about it, but I'm not sure it's true, or it's not always true, that actually words can come out of the deep subconscious, and that's what I set out to try to discover as I worked as a writer, as I worked as somebody who kept a journal, and somebody who's living in other countries. I lived in Japan for a long time, and there were things that were just too complicated for me to figure out without writing. And I realized that I wasn't telling a...
Too complicated to figure out without writing.
Yeah.
How do you figure things out with writing?
Well, I'm sure that a lot of your listeners have experienced sitting down at their journal feeling maybe emotional or twisted or in some way blocked. Maybe there's some situation that they can't figure out. So they just try to write down whatever it is that they do know. And as you write, there's some mysterious or magical thing that happens, that ideas start coming to you and you get them down. They start to relate to each other. And,
because I know I journal a lot, and that has been so immensely useful, particularly with the, was divorced about 20 years ago, actually, now. Uh-huh. And one of the things that I heard on the radio that somebody was talking about, what is a thing that you'd offer to somebody who's about to go through a divorce? And the person said, start a journal. Huh. And I did that, and it has been so useful. So I continue that practice to this day of, like, emptying out my mind onto the page so that I'm much more of a clear focus and I don't have to carry it around because I know I can find it in the journal.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing about that is I can go back to the patterns that I, you know, to say, oh, wow, and there it is again. I really wasn't crazy. You know, I thought that that was happening. And look, back at this time and that time and that time it happened. Mm-hmm. And I go, it's very validating.
So you're talking about first about clearing your mind with writing. And then you're also talking about writing as a way to perceive what's happened and to make records of what's happened. And
not so much as a history, but more as a story. And that's one of the things I want to ask you about later on. How to tell a story, you know, how do you do that, you know, but continue. So that's, what I was using.
Well, I think the important, point that I'm trying to make is writing doesn't have just one purpose. It has a lot of different purposes. So I say a lot of times in the book, let 1,000 flowers bloom. There's a lot of different possibilities in writing, and your writing is going to become more pleasant, more interesting to yourself, more exciting to other people, the more you invite possibilities of ways of writing, purposes for writing, voices to write from, places in your own mind and consciousness to write from. The more there's a multiplicity of that, there's going to be more richness for yourself, and actually it'll be more true to the world, because the world is, in fact, complex and contradictory and multi-layered.
one of the things, when you said 1,000 flowers, mm-hmm. you know, I get this mental image of a field with 1,000 flowers blooming, but they are also individual voices. And then my mind jumped to, well, now, isn't it interesting how a piece of writing, like a poem or something, after you've done it, will sort of take on a life of its own?
Hmm.
You know?
I'm very interested in that.
And in a way, then you interact with this creation now that has its own life.
Can you tell me more about how you've experienced that, taking on a life of its own?
Oh, well, it becomes like an old friend. About, and to speak in hypnotic terms, it reevokes the trance that I was in when I wrote it.
Yes. And meaning, perhaps its meaning changes over time as you look at it a year later
or
5 years later?
I don't know that. I suppose in the way that I attend to it, because I've changed. I've grown.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things also that, to me, doing a radio show like this is a really sacred trust. Hmm. Because I'll go back and listen to recordings or listen to other people's radio programs, and I'll listen to my favorite one again and then again, and then I'm really getting it. And I know that my unconscious gets much more detail than my conscious mind.
Right.
And I've come to really trust the unconscious to do that in some of my training in hypnosis seminars myself. And part of my work is to work with other people to really trust the unconscious. Because the unconscious can handle information and process information completely non-linearly, completely yes. outside of time and space in the way that I've come to understand it. And the conscious mind has this little window of, I heard Bruce Lipton talking about a 40-bit window, or James, I think it was Miller, not James Miller, but George Miller, wrote an article in Psychological Review in 1962 called The Magic Number 7 Plus or Minus 2, where 7 plus or 2 minus bits of attention. So that's one reason why people got a little freaked out when the telephone numbers suddenly were added an area code. Oh no, another area code. I can't remember 10 things at once. Well, how do you remember a phone number? Well, it's three things, a group of three, a group of three, and a group of four sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's opening to, coming back to the field, flowers in the field, but opening to embracing those voices that actually, and there's another thing, tenet in hypnosis about parts of self. And in working with people, I've said, you know, because I'll say, oh, a part of me wants to do X and a part of me wants to do the Y, and they're fighting.
Yeah.
And, oh, what do we do? You know, and the part that's fighting doesn't want to stop fighting. And, well, how do you talk to those parts?
Well, there's a couple of things I want to pick up on from what you just said. One is this idea that you can actually write without knowing what it is you're writing as you're writing. So one way that...
Like automatic writing?
Yeah, I was going to mention that. The surrealists, for those of you who don't know, developed this technique called automatic writing in the 20s, and they were flush with the ideas of Freud that there is an unconscious, which was a pretty revolutionary idea. It is still today, that there's certain parts of your mind that are active and mm-hmm. making choices and creating language and image that we're not necessarily aware of at all times. Mm-hmm. And the subconscious mind or the unconscious mind can create language as well. And so that's what they tried to do, is to try to get into a state of mind where you're writing, but you're not sure what it is that's coming out until after. Now, right now, you and I are speaking, and for the most part, we form some intention to say something,
right.
articulate it, choose words on the fly as we go, and get some similarity to what we had hoped to say come out of our mouth. But there's another way to speak that you might find in improvisational theater and also in automatic writing, where as you're writing, you're not necessarily, or you go fade in and out of awareness of what's going to happen next or what is happening. And it's only after you finish writing, go back and read it. It's in your handwriting, so you must have written it. It's amazing. So in the book,
because the critic is sitting over the shoulder going, well, don't write that. Well, how could you possibly think to write that? And your mother wouldn't like that, you know.
Well, one of the techniques is to actually take advantage of what you were just speaking of, is that the mind can only hold a certain number of things the same time. So you actually engage the front of the mind with some other task, or kind of confuse it or tumble it or engage it in something that will be, that it will focus on, and at the same time keep the pen moving, keep the hand moving, forming letters. And it's not something that happens, say, if you do a 10-minute free write. What I call is writing what you don't know. That's one of the sections in the book.
Mm-hmm.
That happens for the full 10 minutes. You might fade in and out of it. You might say, oh, I do remember writing this part. And that's why I call it writing from the subconscious as opposed to the unconscious. So that's one of the techniques, but it's just one of many in terms of accessing different areas of your brain. I mean, we talk about the mind a lot and, stay away from, difference between mind and brain, but we can use parts of our own neurostructure. We can use metaphors for ganglion and synapses in order to fire off different locations of our brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we can't use these parts of our mind. It's that we're only using a few of them at a time. So by conjuring up different parts of the mind, then we actually expand the area of awareness, as Allen Ginsberg constantly exhorted us to do.
Wow. And I'm wanting to expand our listeners' area of awareness to the front of our minds, to say that I'm Anthony Wright, and I'm your host today on Spirit and Mind. And my guest today is Andy Couturier. Is that how you speak?
That's correct, yeah.
And Andy has written a book called Writing Open the Mind. And on the picture of the cover is a doorway opening to a field of stars. It's just lovely. And the subtitle of the book is Tapping the Subconscious to Free the Writing and the Writer. And you're going to be in Point Reyes Station on this Saturday, are you not?
Yes, Saturday at 7:30, okay. Point Reyes Books, I'll be doing a book signing and a lecture and a bit of a demonstration of some of these techniques. So.
Okay, but now you're going to be at Open Secret in San Rafael tomorrow, isn't
it? That's right, yeah.
And what time will
That'll
you be there?
It'll be at 7 o'clock. It's on C Street in Central San Rafael, Secret Bookstore.
It's got a wonderful stage, and it's real nice energy in there. So, and then you also have a website?
Yes, it's www.theopening.org. That's T-H-E opening. That's theopening.org. And that's the writing center that I run in Oakland. And I'm going to be also doing a one-day, day-long intensive retreat up here in Marin County.
Oh,
In San Rafael on the 29th. Yes.
January.
Yes. So
so there's more contact information about that.
Yes. And you can feel free to give the opening a call, the center, at 510-594-1905.
Would you give that one more time?
Sure. 510-594-1905, and you can find out about 8-week courses. We've got a lot of different things going on.
Well, going to Japan, too.
Yes, I'm going to be taking a group of writers to rural Japan. Now, this is my next book. It's called A Different Kind of Luxury, and it's about people who are living this very rich and satisfying life in the mountains of Japan. They're all people who grew up in urban areas, Japanese people, but decided that this whole hierarchical striving and the whole intention to make as much money as possible and get as much status, which is perhaps even worse in Japan than it is here, was not what they wanted to do with their lives. And they ended up living in India, Nepal, Tibet, China for many years, and really re-imbibing the roots of Asian culture. So I wrote for the Japan Times for several years. I was a columnist profiling these.
In Japanese?
It's actually an English language newspaper.
Okay.
You can actually,
but you're fluent in Japanese.
I am fluent in Japanese. So I'm going to be bringing these two different parts of my life together. I'm very excited about it. In May, from the 13th to the 27th of this year, I'm bringing people on a writing journey to rural Japan. So bringing people to the Japan Alps and the southern island of Shikoku and having people meet these extraordinary poets, philosophers, potters, painters, wood carvers, and really live in some of the best parts of Japan. You know, a lot of the great things in Japan have been destroyed with modernization, but mm-hmm. it still lives on in certain pockets, and that's what I've been doing research on. So
you're talking about the jewels of Japanese culture, I think.
Yeah.
And, sounds really wonderful.
And not just preserving it in a kind of museum way, but actually
bringing it. Oh, it's a living practice.
Yeah, well, and taking all kinds of modern some ideas, the right ones, in small doses and mixing it in with what is going on in Japan historically and Asia historically. So they're very fascinating people. So I'll be bringing people there on a writing journey. So it'll be both writing instruction as well as walking in the mountains and meeting these extraordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also find out about that
on your website.
On the website. If you go to theopening.org/luxury. Mm-hmm. /luxury. You can read 16 of the original Japan Times articles. So,
ooh, so I think I'll do that.
Okay, great.
Anyway, one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about, I have been a piano tuner a long time, and I thought I wanted to work with particularly hypnosis because, in my opinion, hypnosis is actually the precursor to psychology.
Huh. That's an interesting way to say that.
Rather than the other way around.
Huh.
You know, people have been doing hypnosis for millennia, as you know, even back to the Egyptian times or further back. But this is all in preamble to say that I wanted to go to graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this class on critical thinking, as if I didn't know how to do that yet. And I was going to go into the go to the class, and it was kind of like the stories that you hear about the samurai who's going to go into a room for an interview with the master, and he stops at the doorway and he says, "I don't think I'm going to go in that door because uh-huh. if I do, I'm going to get whacked." Because
uh-huh.
I had heard stories about this critical thinking teacher, and I just stopped cold outside the door, and I wouldn't participate in the class.
Uh-huh.
And what are your thoughts on that? Because I don't really feel that I'm as good a writer. I don't have a lot of confidence in my writing, and I'd like to have more confidence in it.
Well, a lot of people come to me with this story. I mean, hundreds of people call with exactly the same story. And one thing that we spoke about, you and I, about the educational system in the United States being based on a kind of rigid, I think you said it was a Prussian system.
It's a Prussian model from about 400 years ago.
So the idea is that the student best learns.
You must perform.
The student best learns by suffering. That learning and suffering are connected. That it's another way to think about it is the castor oil approach, right? It's good for you. It tastes terrible, but it's going to do you well. And most people feel that if they're enjoying their learning process, they're probably not learning at all.
Uh-huh.
And so I actually went to school to learn the teaching of writing. So I'm professionally trained as a writing teacher at there's a very good program actually at San Francisco State in the teaching of composition. Now, composition is probably this kind of critical thinking, English 1A, and it's in some ways a very narrow idea that you're supposed to teach 18-year-olds primarily from marginalized backgrounds or people who have less confidence in their, quote, writing ability. And I'm mm-hmm. going to put big quotes around that because I don't think that's really something that's measurable. But in this program, they're teaching you how to teach writing. And although this program is more open than a lot of programs, the same idea that you must be graded on your writing, that it is possible to say that this is a B-minus paper and that this is an A-plus paper, and that the purpose of being in school is to compete with other students. And as you might imagine, this causes contraction, which is exactly the opposite of accessing the subconscious.
Well, you were talking about expanding the field of awareness.
Yes. So what we're trying to do in Writing from the Subconscious, which is one of the courses I teach, is help people access the place that is their own genius mind. I mean, I think most people have had experience of dreaming in which something that they couldn't believe that they had thought up appears. I mean, the clarity of the imagery or the thoughts or the ideas, or maybe even some words come to them.
Well, there's even a story about, what was it, Paul McCartney, when he wrote one of the tunes, he dreamed it, and he dreamed that the Rolling Stones were playing it, and he got up and he said, well, geez, that was a great tune, I'm going to try it. And he found out that they didn't record it, and he said, God, I'm going to write it down before they get it.
That's funny.
But anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, that's exactly what happens to people in dreams all the time. And the idea is to be able to thin that barrier, thin that membrane between consciousness and, you know, awake 2 p.m. consciousness and that kind of dreamy trance state that we can get into. And that's what a lot of the exercises in Writing Open the Mind are about. Lots of different kinds of tricks or chutes and ladders or cajolings or conjurings or incantations to bring your mind to a different place than your everyday thought and help you access that.
So you're talking about gateways.
Gateways to the subconscious. Now, I want to follow up on your experience of having a negative experience in school, because most people have. I want to say that most writing teachers are incredibly generous people, and they're really trying to help you. Mm-hmm. But they're, I believe, often stuck in a worldview that says the way to improve someone else's writing is by telling them what's wrong, right? So here you come up with something out of your own experience or your own passion or your own perception or perhaps even love, and you write it down, and someone focuses on your semicolons, or someone focuses on you've misspelled there and there, or they'll say from their own inimitable way of looking at things that it's disorganized. And by punishing people, by saying, no, you've got to do it this way, follow the 5-paragraph essay, follow the Roman numeral organization.
I struggled writing a 10-page paper, and I shouldn't be struggling.
Right.
I don't want to struggle.
Yeah, and I think that's where the confidence that you were asking about comes from, is by finding out that there's other ways to communicate, and that those other ways to communicate will touch certain people. Now, you're not going to have Aretha Franklin stop singing because, you know, certain people don't like soul music.
Right.
You're not going to have, a classical composer say, hey, I'm not going to compose any more classical music. It's out of fashion. No, it's going to work on some people. It's not going to work on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So the important thing with writing is to not think that, oh, this kind of writing, this way of writing is correct, proper, accepted, and this other way is not. And that happens slowly, but it comes with generosity, really. Generosity, not just to other people, but generosity to yourself.
Well, I think in a way that's... from my training in hypnosis, that generosity and kindness to the subconscious mind, I remember hearing someone say that the subconscious mind is socialized to about 6 years old, and it has all this amazing capacity for massive amounts of processing and access to areas that we don't usually go to. And I don't know, do you know who Milton Erickson is?
I have heard of him, and I've read a little bit.
He is a premier hypnotist, and I his works are just... quite monumental, and in my opinion, he's going to be as influential as Freud after people really discover him. I listened to his tonality, and there is a public broadcasting figure who had nearly identical tonality, although I didn't necessarily always agree with what he had put forth, and that was Mr. Rogers.
Huh.
Milton Erickson and Mr. Rogers have the same delivery, and it's because they're speaking to the same part of self.
That's very interesting.
And so when if I want to communicate to someone's unconscious mind, I'm going to be very gentle and very kind, as if I am speaking, because I am quite literally speaking to the six-year-old who has command of this gateway.
Uh-huh.
You know, to say, I'm so glad that you showed up with this earnest idea about this lovely little flower that you wanted to show me. It's so cool. What is it that we might explore further about that? What would you like me to know?
Huh. Well, I would recommend, in terms of your struggle with this idea of being confident about your writing, is to speak to that part of your own self in that same field of generosity.
I'm awfully nervous. I've got to say that. But that's part of the thing about, you know, we were talking before you went on the air, and you wanted me to ask a question about, you know, what is the freedom? And it's to give that one the freedom to show up.
Yeah, and it's really a long-term consideration of what is freedom. How do we discover ways to be free? And that's what this is really about in Writing Open the Mind, is there's lots of different places where we're shackled. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different places where we don't have the freedom to go in a direction, to use aardvark or perquacky or an irk or bonk. You know, we think that's, you know, inappropriate or wrong, and that's where we're stuck in a lot of ways.
Right. Cool. Well, we're going to have to take a short break here, and we'd like to invite people to call 663-8492, 663-8492, if you have any questions for Andy Couturier, and you have written a book called Writing Open the Mind, Tapping the Subconscious to Free the Writing and the Writer. And would you give your contact information? And you're going to be in Point Reyes on Saturday, is that right?
I'm going to be in Point Reyes at Point Reyes Books Saturday the 21st, this coming Saturday at 7:30. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing a book signing event, and I want to thank them for that. And I'm also going to be at Open Secret Books, in case you're not free on Saturday.
Oh, tomorrow.
Cool. Wednesday, and that's going to be at 7 o'clock. It's on C Street in Central San Rafael. You can find out more about the work of The Opening, which is the center I run, at theopening.org. That's theopening.org. And you can also reach us by phone at 510-594-1905.
And my guest today is Andy Couturier. And you have written a book called Writing Open the Mind. It's about tapping the subconscious to free the writing and the writer. We were talking about what is freedom? And but once you've got something written,
yes,
you have to revise it, maybe.
Uh-huh.
So how can you do painless revising?
Well, you know, sometimes when I teach classes on revising, people think, oh, my God, it's going to be so miserable. But it doesn't really have to be. I actually wrote my master's thesis partially on the topic of revision. And that's what I was going to say about the field of composition. It's very interesting because they do have, you know, funding and research capacity to see how different people revise. How do experienced writers revise? How do young writers revise? What are the differences? And
why do we have to revise?
Well, first of all, you don't always have to. It depends upon your purpose for writing. Often people are writing just for themselves, and they feel that they can't even read it themselves because it's so incoherent or it's flawed or, oh, God, I said that before. So often we've got this sense of dissonance, and that's one of the key words I use when talking about revising. And
I saw that in the book.
Yeah, since you're a piano tuner.
Talk to us about dissonance.
Well, often we've thought of dissonance as a problem, and certainly in revising, if you've used warm and sensitive to describe a particular character five different meaningful sounding ways throughout your book, that might think, okay, I don't want to use that. So it might be a dissonance in between the way you'd like your book or your essay, your poem to look, and the way it does look.
Well, I guess I'm feeling dissonance about my lack of confidence, because I think once I get it down, then I'll be unconsciously competent, and then I'll just sit and write. Does that happen?
Well, it can happen, and there's lots of different ways. I mean, it depends on whether you think there's a perfect version of your writing somewhere out there.
I'm thinking about for an audience, like for a psychology audience or for a general population or for... And is that also part of the focus of revision?
Well, okay, so let's take that
as an
example. I'm
jumping around here.
That's all right. That's all right. So one of the ways that we can think about that, and that's one of the kinds of revision we can do, revision is addition, subtraction, substitution, and reordering. That's all you can do in revision is add things, subtract things, resequence them, substitute one thing for another. And what you can do in revising from the subconscious is to try to find plenty. That's the key word, is to have lots, to add a lot of different kinds of things from a lot of different ways. I actually like to use the word transformation more than the word revision when we think about writing.
Because I hear revision and I go, oh no, I have to look at it all over again and recreate it, and then I'd have to do that again. And
You have not enough, right, you're going to, or if you've got this idea of it's got to look a certain way and it's got to feel a certain way, otherwise it's bad, and since it came out of my soul, then my soul must be bad, or some part of my psyche is bad.
That's a boundary violation, certainly, right? You know, to assign a quality to something that is naturally spiritual.
And it's something that's so vast. So one of the ways is create lots. And a lot of the exercises in Writing Open the Mind are about generating plenty. And then when you have plenty, you go through and you look for where energy rises. Where is there a quickening of voice? Where are there places where the use of vocabulary is pretty exciting? Or where are there places where points are being, you know, the rhythm of the sentences are being kind of driven home? That's probably where you're most engaged. So that's the first step, is to see where the energy rises. Then you go through and you kind of circle those areas, or you underline those phrases. I like to use a green pen for go as opposed to a red pen for stop.
Right.
And you find the places that are working. And from that, if you want to do a large scale revision, you actually get to play with that. You can actually physically cut and paste, cut out the parts that do have energy and take them away from the rest of the writing. So you can do that with your computer. If you're working on with a computer, you can actually write phrases or short sentences out on index cards and place them on a clear blank table. Move those index cards around and see how they group together. See how they juxtapose with each other. And then you'll start to find new connections, because that's what you're actually doing with your own brain. You're connecting this part of your neurostructure with this other part of your neurostructure. You're creating new synaptic passageways by grouping together different pieces of writing. Once you've done that, then you're starting to create an intuitive flow, an intuitive, not kind of rational, linear, logical three main points or five basic reasons why or compare and contrast, which is a way of thinking, but it's not the only way of thinking. So if you're revising from plenty...
Jeez, that is so liberating.
It's really...
Thank you.
It's really fun to do. I do this all the time in the workshops that I lead, where we take... disparate parts. They may be from something else. It might be something from a newspaper, and we play with them. We put them together in different ways. It may be something from something you wrote when you were 19 years old, and you're wanting to re-examine those thoughts you had at the time. And you put them together in different ways. And so this is a kind of structural revision. But you can use the subconscious to revise on a micro level as well.
Well, one of the things that came to mind about academic writing, particularly because I really would like to be masterful with that.
Yes.
And let's say I'm going to write a topic on sweaters.
Uh-huh.
You know? Okay. But then you got to say, okay, well, what about the sheep that gave the wool to make the sweaters?
Right.
Okay. Where were they raised? Well, but what do the sheep eat to make the wool have that characteristic, and what breed do they have, and how come the DNA does that? But then, you know, how is what they eat raised? Mm-hmm. And was it done with organic chemicals or not? And then what about the dirt where the stuff was raised? And
well, let me ask
where do you
some,
stop?
Let me ask you, when you're giving me this example, when you're talking about this kind of regression of causes, Anthony, mm-hmm. what part of your mind, if you can identify it, is active when you're giving, when you're laying out this example of the sheep and what they eat and what it,
well, certainly the linear and critical, and when I'm writing poetry, that part is asleep.
Okay.
It's gone away because I don't need to try to communicate that particular level of, forgive me, anal detail. You know, if he doesn't know what, you know, what the fertilizer in the ground of those sheep, you know, that they were, you know, where their food came from, he can't talk about sweaters at all, you know. So I'm going, well, I want to cover cover myself, you know, in as many ways as possible so that all challenges, and of course you can't.
Well, it may be a kind of a fear reaction. I'm not inside your head, but there's often when people do academic writing, they're afraid of being attacked. And unfortunately, that often comes through even in, you know, widely regarded academic publications. You can see all these hedges. And I think, you know, you know, some people might criticize me for this and some people might criticize me for that. It's kind of, it's hard to
read.
And
then pretty soon you got so many hedges, you got a labyrinth.
Yes. Nicely said. But I think that that's where I, you know, an interesting way that I start some of my workshops is, what's your favorite pen? Why do you enjoy writing with this pen? Why do you enjoy writing with this kind of paper? And the reason I do that is to help people focus on the pleasure of writing. And I think that even if you're writing something academic, most people who do go into a particular field, say they were kind of interested in history and they end up, my mother's a historian and she writes about colonial Mexico, 18th century. And she didn't go into that because her professor told her to. She was in some level interested, passionate about these people and the way life was and family. She's a family historian. So she was interested in her own family relations. She was interested in both the family that I grew up in and the family she grew up in. And so she's following her own interest and pleasure. And I think that behind a lot of academic writing, there is and there can be. And that's how I wrote all my papers. I thought, what am I really interested in? I was interested in revision. I did my papers on revision. I was interested in text structure. How do we structure a piece?
Well, I want to get the form, but then you, when you're writing, you have to make the form your own. Isn't that right?
Well,
I mean, to make the structure your own, because that way, then you're not trying to fit in, you know, a round peg into a square hole.
Well, writing is always a conversation, isn't it? Just like you and I are having a conversation here. So you're not just writing about sweaters in a vacuum. Someone, if you're in a university, perhaps someone's asked you to write about sweaters. You're in some relationship with a with a professor, and you have clues. And you know, if you are in a power imbalance situation, say this professor is attempting to you know, grade you, then of course that's going to be a more difficult situation. You have more constraints.
But even within that, you know, academic writing sometimes is so dry,
right.
And I want to make it fun and exciting and transformative to the reader. Just the very fact that you read it and you're done and you go, oh, wow, I'm a different person because I read that.
Right.
You know? And I don't know why academic writing has to be so dry, I guess is the thing. And
well, I don't think it has to be, but I mean, it really depends upon the fear factor, really. You know, it comes back to people being afraid of being judged, of being taken down. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of great feedback on this book. A lot of people who I've never met have called me up and said this is, or, you know, contacted me, said this has been really, really helpful. But you know what? Sometime back, I did get, you know, through my publicist that somebody did not like my book. And it was hard. But, and you know, it was a couple of days of feeling like, well, maybe it isn't useful. But you know what? So many people have said it was useful.
Oh, no.
You cannot write something that nobody's going to dislike.
Right.
And if you want to try to start writing something that nobody is ever going to dislike, you know, what ends up happening? You can't write. And that's what stops a lot of people from writing.
Oh, right. I'm Anthony Wright. I'm your host today on Spirit and Mind. And my guest is Andy Couturier. And he has written a book called Writing Open the Mind, Tapping the Subconscious to Free the Writing and the Writer. And the moment I saw this book, I went, I want to talk to this guy. And so I'm really glad that you're here. And you're actually going to be in Point Reyes on Saturday, is that right?
That's right. Saturday at 7:30 at Point Reyes Books.
Okay.
And also tomorrow, Wednesday, 7 p.m., at Open Secret.
Open Secret
in San Rafael on C Street, yes.
Okay.
And I'm also going to be teaching a one-day workshop on the 29th in San Rafael, so it's a 10 to 5 workshop, and I want to invite anyone who's interested to contact me about that. That's phone number is 510-594-1905.
Okay, and you also have a website?
Yes, that's www.theopening.org, theopening.org.
Great. Great. So I'm just feeling all of this in my body, and you talked about before we went on the air about writing from the body and
yes.
physicality. Talk to us about that.
This is the field that I'm really exploring the most now that I've finished the book. I'm going to actually be teaching a 12-week series in the East Bay on writing from the kinetic body. So one of the gateways to the subconscious is movement, improvisation. I mean, people talk about getting into trance when they dance pretty regularly, and movement can bring you into all kinds of different states. I'll give you a short example. Mm-hmm. Let's say you've just gone through a breakup, and you're writing about that. Then let's say you write for 5 or 10 minutes, just freely about that. Now you turn off, let's say it's nighttime, you turn off all the lights in your house, so it's really dark. And then you start trying to walk around your house in the dark and try to walk as quickly as possible. It brings on a particular state of mind by a particular kind of movement.
Yes.
Then you go, once that state of mind has been conjured by movement, turn on the lights and start writing from that new state of mind, on the same topic, but from that new place.
Without the critic showing up trying to censor anything.
Well, you have to just keep the pen moving.
Okay.
And so there's other ways. You could roll on the floor. You could roll down a hill. This is a daytime activity, perhaps,
yes.
But you could try it at night. Say if you were rolling down a hill, grassy hill, and then were to write immediately after you stopped doing that. To take something. Now, I think you mentioned to me before we went on that you were working on something called tuning a person. Can you give
people
me
people tuning?
People tuning. And what would be the subtitle for that book if you have one? People tuning colon.
Oh well,
it go directly from your subconscious here.
People tuning. Tuning the portal of being.
Okay, so let's say we take tuning the portal of being.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to ask the listeners to imagine right now that if you were to stand up and say out loud, tuning the portal of being slowly, and for each of those three chunks, you were to make a symbolic gesture with your body, it may be a direct symbol or an indirect symbol, of tuning the portal of being, and do that in a sequence. One gesture, you could be on the ground, you could be on your knees, you could be on your back, you could be standing up, you could be, if you were to make a gesture for each of those and run through it, then do it again and again, you would start to see images in your mind. You would mm-hmm. start to get some understanding, some physical understanding of what's happening in your book. And then you make that gesture smaller and smaller, but with the same amount of energy, until you're not moving at all. As soon as you do that, then you sit down and you write whatever comes to you. And this also has some basis in really some neurological research that, I mean, people are talking about the mind and the body are not separate, but
right.
really they aren't. I mean, our neurostructure is connected, brain through the spinal cord out to our fingertips. Memories are lodged in actual parts of our body, in our hips, in our shoulders,
right, in our feet. Yep.
That's where memory, intelligence, imagination is lodged. So by actually making gestures, you're activating your mind. So that's one of the ways that we use in writing from the kinetic body. There's a whole chapter in Writing Open the Mind.
What a great exercise.
Yes.
Oh, my.
And I'm very thankful to my colleague, Jiang Chung, who's a dancer and an improviser for the clue on that exercise. But there's there's lots of exercises where you can use improvisational theater techniques.
This is improvisational theater.
Well, some of it comes from that. I kind of take from anything that looks like, that looks interesting, that seems to be a way to access a part of your mind. So improvisational theater, if you've ever done it, if you've ever seen it done, someone will throw out a topic or a situation and people will come up with something amazing right off the bat. They're accessing their subconscious mind.
Right.
And they do a lot of exercises and they do a lot of techniques to get at that part of their mind.
But they're moving around a lot. You know, I remember that the TV show about Whose Line Is It, you know? Uh-huh. Those guys are all over that stage.
Well, you know, that's one way to do it, and you can move. Let me give you another example. Say you are writing about teaching your son to drive. That's another thing we were talking right. about before the show started. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to kind of capture that moment for you as a father and your son as a starting driver, someone who has fear. And you were to do, you know, a few minutes of writing just to get started. Mm-hmm. And then you were to walk around a large space, perhaps say the Dance Palace, quickly. Stopping, starting, stopping, starting, making herky-jerky movement until your mind state changed. Stop immediately and do some more writing. 5 minutes. Stand up again. Move around very gracefully and slowly. Perhaps you do Tai Chi or Qigong. Move in a really fluid and smooth way. Then again, stop and do some writing. Then again, lie down on the ground, do a deep full body relaxation. Again, do some writing. I bet you'll find out some things about teaching your son to drive, some wisdom that you had no idea was resident in your brain. But there it is. It's out on the page. It's in your handwriting. You must have written it. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of the ways we can use...
I got to tell you, as I'm sitting here, I'm not exactly in a state of fear about that. But my body and my brain is going, well, now this is really different.
Uh-huh.
This is really unexpected. This is not something that... This is very different than just sitting at a table after having a cup of tea and writing what I think I ought to write.
Right.
And in a way, the unfamiliarity and a little bit of the fear has to do... It's not in control of the conscious mind anymore. It's more about, venturing out onto that thin ice of the unknown, of not knowing what's going to happen.
Well, that's what the subconscious is. And I think part of this work is creating a tolerance for ambiguity, a tolerance for the unknown.
Oh, thank you for that.
And that's, I'll read, if you
please,
let me read just a little bit from the book. This is from the chapter called Shaking Up the Curmudgeon, Writing from the Kinetic Body.
And what page, by the way?
This is on page 147.
Okay.
Why use the body to find new places in writing, the curmudgeon camping on your shoulder might say. I mean, come on, writing is cerebral. You think, and then you write. You think, and then you write. Case closed. Well, hey, says the jester, other shoulder. Yeah, it's probably true you are unfamiliar with this way of working, poor Grumpopus. But since you're not dead yet, let's try something new. We writers are shy, though. We don't want to phase shift to moving around the room. Our culture has taught us to dislike standing up. We have shame about movement. We've been disciplined, afraid of the ridiculous. We sit there, preferring motionless angst, tasting our testiness, more dirt-clawed than person, more bent out of shape than in. But the body is wise. It knows you need to move. Yes, you've heard go outside and take a walk when you've got a crimp in the brain, but why stop there? So, and that
why
whole...
stop there?
Yeah, that whole chapter is about that, writing from the kinetic body, using different ways to access different parts of your mind by movement, gesture, and improv.
It's really fun to go to areas that I haven't thought about.
Uh-huh.
Because
isn't it?
It's unexplored country. And there are wonderful treasures there. And I'm old enough to know, I'm old enough to go out by myself now and to wake up in these unexplored countries.
Yes.
What a wonderful thing. This is so cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
I really appreciate it. I'm Anthony Wright, and I'm your host today on Spirit and Mind, and I'm talking with Andy Couturier, and he has written a book called Writing Open the Mind, Tapping the Subconscious to Free the Writing and the Writer, and we're almost out of time, and you're going to be in Point Reyes on Saturday.
Yes, at 7:30 at Point Reyes Books.
And then tomorrow?
At Open Secret, and that's going to be at 7 o'clock.
Okay, and please give your website and
it's
contact.
www.theopening.org. And the phone number is, theopening.org, theopening.org. And the phone number for the opening is 510-594-1905. We're also going to be doing a one-day workshop out here in Marin and in San Rafael. And that's going to be on the 29th, and it's going to be from 10 to 5, and I really want to welcome people to that as well. And I've got weekly courses, as well as a special writing retreat in rural Japan that we're going to be leading in May.
Oh, that sounds so much fun.
Yes.
And before we're done, I wanted to ask you, we talked before we got on the air, and I wanted to know what you have to say about what is pattern in writing, and also purposelessness and purposefulness.
Well, you know, often people will say, you know, I'm writing and I get finished and I find that it's incoherent, that it seems to be disjointed. And I hear this all the time. And I think that it's very difficult to tell with your own writing, especially if you've just done a free write, whether there are connections or ligatures or fibers that are connecting writing. Because language and discourse is connected by hundreds of thousands of structures of connection that you don't necessarily see. So you might have in class one student say, hey, you know, I wrote this piece. It feels really incoherent, you know, and they'll read it. And I'll say, how many of you thought that was incoherent? And nobody else in the room thought it was incoherent.
Just the person's critic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we're often overjudgmental, but there are ways that, and I think if you overdetermine, if you overconnect things, you're actually kind of being patronizing in some way to the reader. Mm-hmm. Whereas if there's different ways that each of us can create meaning from different kinds of juxtapositions in writing, different kinds of scramblings, it's more generous in some ways to the reader as opposed to kind of just giving them the three main points, which they can either argue with or accept. That's our only option. But if you can create a field of possibilities where they're trying to co-create meaning, creating patterns in negotiation, in conversation with the writing, then we're having a relationship with writing that's two-way, that's not just bossiness.
I want to thank you so much for coming today, Andy, and I would like
it's
to have
really
you on at another time.
Oh, absolutely.
And before we're done, I would like to ask you to read this quote, and you actually met Peter Beagle, did you?
Yes, yes.
You discovered that he lived right down the street from you, and this is a quote that from Peter Beagle that just got my attention.
Okay. Well, I'll tell just a moment about this. I actually came across this in a book that was published in 1973, and I didn't know who Peter Beagle was at the time. And it turns out that he's somebody who's alive today, and I've actually met him. So here's the quote. Only to a magician is the world forever fluid, infinitely mutable and eternally new. Only he knows the secret of change. Only he knows truly that all things are crouched in eagerness to become something else. And it's from this universal tension that he draws his power.